couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movie, the one big movie, and that is Avengers Infinity War. And I'm also going to look back at the Marvel movies with the Fat Guy 5, and I'm also going to be talking about the smaller, more independent film, Lean on Pete. There'll also be some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the lovable and adorable Paddington 2. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
A little bit of more sad news this week. A nod to Vern Troyer. He passed away last weekend, so I didn't get to talk about that on the show. Last week, he was age 49, which is very young, and the immediate cause of death was not released, although some people think it was a possible suicide. There was also high levels of alcohol in his system. His publicist and his people sent out messages on Facebook and on Instagram talking about depression and struggles that he went through. So there's been some speculation as to what the actual cause of death is. But anytime somebody is dealing with struggles internally, especially when you're a celebrity who's always putting out a funny face or a whimsical exterior, people may not know the pain you're feeling. And I, from what I've understood, Vern Troyer was a very sweet guy. He was a very nice guy. And it's sort of like when Robin Williams killed himself several years ago, it came as a surprise because everyone saw Robin Williams as funny and he was always smiling. Well, you know, he had some real demons and he struggled with some real problems, and those problems ended up getting him in the end. It reminds us that external appearances are not always the truth, and that just extends to everyday life. So if you've got somebody who's always happy and go lucky, they may be suffering inside. So we need to keep our eyes open for that. The other piece of news that's actually pretty huge is the Bill Cosby verdict came in on Thursday, and he was found guilty of 3 counts of sexual assault. Now, this is mainly significant because his first trial and this trial, the first trial ended in a mistrial because it was a hung jury. And when they got to this new trial, between the two trials, you had the Me Too movement explode. And there was, I don't know if it was a greater awareness, just not just in the entertainment industry, but everywhere, of sexual assault and sexual predation that was happening with powerful people, powerful men in particular in Hollywood. You know, obviously Harvey Weinstein's the epicenter of that. This impacted the trial. I absolutely think that, not that an external force impacted the trial, but the world changed drastically in the last year. And that made the jury more susceptible to believing these women who were accusing Bill Cosby. And then some of the things changed in the trial. They allowed more victims to come forward in the trial, and so they can show a pattern of behavior. And that's good because, you know, if you're out there being a sexual predator for 30, 40 years, it shows that you can still get your comeuppance. Even the guy's 80. Now, what's going to happen to him next? Is he going to go to jail? I don't know. I doubt that Bill Cosby is going to see the inside of a jail cell. I honestly think that, I mean, he's 80. So in Pennsylvania, as what I've read is that you can sometimes get out on bail after sentencing, even if you're sentenced to jail time, you can appeal and not actually serve the time and like be under house arrest or not actually serve time inside a prison. And he's rich enough that he has the money to get the lawyers to do that. Your average person, if you're, you know, you don't, may not have that option, but he's going to have that option. I mean, he can get 10 years per count, which would be 30 years, which means he would die in prison, but most likely he's just going to run out the clock on his own life. And the other thing is they do an assessment of a sexual predator to find out if they're basically violent sexual predators. You know, essentially, are they a danger right now? And, or is it, do they need to immediately be incarcerated? And my guess is after that assessment, they're going to be like, well, his sexual predator days are over simply because no one's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'll take those pills you give me. He's not going to be doing this anymore. And I'm not saying that's a reason to not punish him. I'm just saying that that is likely. I wouldn't be surprised if they say, well, he's 80, his career's over, he no longer has the power that he was using, so it's unlikely he's going to be a danger to other people. So there's a possibility they could say, oh, we're going to, you know, it's okay that he just stays out on bail, as opposed to somebody who they're afraid is going to go out and start attacking women on the street. It's because he's rich, because he's powerful, and they're going to look at it and say, because he's 80. And unfortunately, I don't think he's going to see the inside of a jail cell. And his career's already ruined. I mean, what he was held up as, the American's dad and a moral authority, that's all gone. That's out the window, and that's been out the window for a while. So that's the real victory here. Don't look at victory as being Bill Cosby in jail. You got to look at victory as awareness and belief. And that, in that sense, there was a success. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Ocean's 8. I believe I covered this one earlier, but I wanted to kind of revisit the movie with the new trailer coming out on June 8th.
Debbie Ocean, convicted felon. Her brother, Danny Ocean, more convicted felon. She was present on the night of the incident.
So you want to hit a jewelry store?
Not exactly. In
3.5 weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball, and we are going to rob it.
Oh, lucky you.
$16.5 million in each of your bank accounts 5 weeks from now.
That's a lot.
I think I said this when I talked about this before. I think it's a neat idea. I like a lot of the women involved. I like Sandra Bullock. I like Cate Blanchett. I like Anne Hathaway. I think that the women they have in here is kind of cool. I do wonder if Gary Ross is going to be able to deliver the same punchiness and attitude that Steven Soderbergh did. The other thing that does kind of bother me a little, and this isn't a unique criticism because I think this applies to the other Ocean's movies. They're like, oh, we're going to get together all these stars. Well, Cate Blanchett and Sandra Bullock and Helena Bonham Carter and Anne Hathaway, they're top tier stars. Then they've got like Rihanna. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Rihanna is nowhere near the same level as Cate Blanchett. It's not a cast flush with stars. It's like got four big stars and then four lesser stars, and it really dwindles by the end. Even Mindy Kaling, I like her. I think she's great. I wouldn't call her a star along the same tier as Cate Blanchett. But still, this might be a fun movie. The next one I want to talk about is Venom, which opens on October 5th.
We found something. We call them symbiotes. Carlton Drake believes that the union between human and symbiote is the key to our evolution.
I'm feeling really sick. I'm hearing a voice.
Eddie.
If you're gonna stay, you will only hurt bad people.
The way I see it, we can do whatever we want. Do we have a deal?
Tom Hardy as Venom in the Sony Pictures attempt to scrounge something from the Spider-Man franchise. I mean, yeah, they're still technically distributing the Spider-Man Homecoming movie and its sequel. This is when they were trying to do their own franchise, and everyone wanted their own Avengers franchise, and it just wasn't working for anybody because they were going about it the wrong way, and they were trying to rush it and launch it off of a single character. But this actually looks pretty decent. I think Jenny Slate is a little bit miscast in this, mainly because her voice just doesn't. She's got this squeaky voice, and she's supposed to be a scientist. I like Jenny Slate, but her as Jean Ralphio's sister in Parks and Rec, or as that teacher in that Chris Evans movie Gifted, is a little more believable than her as this super smart scientist who doesn't know how to pronounce the word symbiote. I never read the Venom comics, so I wasn't totally offended by Spider-Man 3, but I have hope for the fans. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a retrospective of the Marvel movies.
We'll be right back.
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. This is the Avengers weekend, and the only movie that's really opening in theaters is Avengers Infinity War. Everyone just got out of its way, which is odd because even on other big movies, like when Iron Man came out or The Dark Knight came out, or even when like Star Wars came out, both Star Wars, the Force Awakens and Star Wars The Last Jedi, there was other things coming out against it, either right at the same time or oftentimes on the same day. I remember when Iron Man came out, there was a romantic comedy, Maid of Honor, came out that weekend. Counter-programming had become very important to movies, and the Star Wars movies, they were Christmas releases, so like I think it was Sisters, the Tina Fey movie with her and Amy Poehler, came out against Star Wars The Force Awakens. So it's usually customary for Hollywood to release at least something against it, but they're not releasing anything. I mean, I think there's like one or two movies that are getting two or three theater releases like New York and LA, but very, very small. They're not even doing big expansions this week. And I think part of the reason for that is the Marvel movies tend to appeal to all four quadrants. They're not just fanboy movies. They're not all just guys who like the movies. They are a huge chunk of people. Like, one of the biggest fans in my household of Marvel movies is my wife, and she loves romantic comedies, but she loves the Marvel movies because of the comedy, because of the whimsical nature, and she really gets into the characters. So Marvel has kind of been bulletproof against counter-programming, and for a big movie like this, everyone got out of the way. So instead of talking about some other movie, let's talk a little bit about the Marvel movies in retrospective, because I want to do a Fat Guy 5, and it's a little bit different, because everyone's there saying, here's my top 10 Marvel movies, or here's the all 19 of them ranked. Because these are actually kind of hard to compare to each other, because some are very different. I mean, it's really, really hard to compare Ant-Man to the first Iron Man or Avengers or Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, these are very different films. So I'm going to do it a little bit different. The first thing I'm going to say is my favorite Phase 1 movie. They're putting these in phases. The first phase went from Iron Man to the Avengers. That was the first phase. That was basically the first steps of the experiment to see if it worked. And I'm going to say that my favorite of those movies was clearly Where Everything Came to a Head.
War has started. And we are hopelessly outgunned.
Director Fury, I think it's time.
It's called the Avengers Initiative.
The Avengers came out in 2012. Made huge money, and it redefined cinema, just as much as The Dark Knight redefined cinema in 2008, or the way Batman redefined cinema in 1989. And I love The Avengers. I thought it struck a perfect chord, and it made me a fan even more than the lead-up movies that were doing well but weren't massive hits. Now, in terms of Phase 2, that one started with Iron Man 3 and went through Ant-Man. And stuck in the middle of that was my favorite in that phase.
We arrested these five on Xandar. Check out the rap sheets. They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
I know I've picked two of the team-up movies. You know, the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy were about teams. The Guardians of the Galaxy, though, was kind of an origin. But it was a necessary origin because very few people knew who these people were. And while I actually did enjoy Iron Man 3 and Thor: The Dark World and The Winter Soldier, all those second movies in the run, it wasn't Age of Ultron wasn't as good. And it did have the Ant-Man origin story, which I really liked Ant-Man. I think it gets short shrift. But Ant-Man was a fun movie. But ultimately, Guardians of the Galaxy was my favorite in Phase 2. Now, for Phase 3, we are technically in the middle of Phase 3, about two-thirds of the way through. But it started with Captain America: Civil War, and it's all leading up to Avengers: Infinity War and beyond. And in that one, a little bit of a different angle, was my favorite movie in that run so far.
It's main event time.
Each other is a friend from work.
That's right. Now, not to spoil anything on my review, I actually liked Thor Ragnarok probably a little bit better than Infinity War. Of course, I want to see Infinity War again, and it's way up there as a great movie. You know, spoiler alert, I'm burying the lead for my review. Ultimately, there's just such fun in Thor Ragnarok that I really enjoyed that one. Now, finally, since we're only through the phase three, talk about like breaking this out a little bit. In terms of superhero movies, you usually have origin stories somewhere. And I have always been down on origin stories, especially for characters that we know. Like Spider-Man. We don't need an origin story for Spider-Man. And they were smart enough to sort of squeak Spider-Man into Captain America Civil War and not have to go through the repetitious story that we saw in Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man. That was the big problem with The Amazing Spider-Man, is half that movie was a repeat. And so we don't need any more Batman origin stories, Superman origin stories. We know how these people form. But sometimes you have a character that is critical to the universe, but not everybody knows who he is. And this is the one that I enjoyed in terms of origin stories, the one I liked the most.
This doesn't make any sense.
Not everything does. Not everything has to. Through the mystic arts, we harness energy and shape reality.
Doctor Strange, it's the lesser remembered movie. Everyone knows Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Captain America. And even now, you know, Black Panther is such a big name. People forget about Doctor Strange, but I really enjoyed that origin story because I thought it was a necessary one that not a whole lot of people knew, but it was also a kind of an out-of-the-box movie and very interesting. And then finally, let's talk about my favorite Marvel hero. Of the 70 or so characters in the Marvel Universe, I know everyone has their own favorite. And this one for me has had a rocky road here and there. So it may not be the one you would expect.
Let's suit up.
That sounds exhausting.
Hulk. Smash.
Yeah, I kind of teased you there. I put some of the other characters in there. You heard Tony Stark as Iron Man. You heard Steve Rogers as Captain America. But ultimately, Hulk is my favorite of the Avenger characters. And while I like the other ones as well, and while I think that they did a great job bringing Thor to life, because that could be very stilted, the Hulk, I get. And that's because everybody has a rage monster hiding inside them, ready to burst out. And for me, I can relate to the duality of it. Everybody has kind of a duality, two sides of their personality. Everybody knows what it's like to have to control their inner beast. And I think that the character of the Hulk actually has the greatest depth potential, but they've been afraid to explore it. But yeah, I think there's a lot to be explored. And even going back to the 70s, there's a humanity to Bruce Banner that should be explored. And I'd like to see them do more. Well, it was David Banner in the TV series, but that was still a good show back in the 70s. So those are my picks for my favorite elements of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I need to go to a break now. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. When I come back, I will be giving you my full detailed review, but spoiler-free review of Avengers Infinity War. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the big movie of the week. Let's finally get down to reviewing it. And probably a bunch of you have already seen it because it came out Thursday night and it made tens of millions of dollars on Thursday night alone. So it's worth talking about. And that is Avengers Infinity War. The Mad Titan Thanos searches for the 6 Infinity Stones, which will give him control over space and time, and all the Marvel heroes must come together to fight him.
The entire time I knew him, he only ever had one goal. To wipe out half the universe. If he gets all the Infinity Stones, he can do it with the snap of his fingers.
Tell me his name again.
Thanos.
We have what Thanos wants, so that's what we use.
This cinematic experiment started back in 2008 when they did Iron Man. And I remember when Iron Man came out and that tag showed up of, hey, we've got this Avengers initiative with Nick Fury. And the excitement from people who at least understood the comic books and had read the comic books or at least were aware of them, it was very exciting. It would have been like having a Justice League tease at the end of The Dark Knight. One of the reasons I don't think they ever really tried this before is the ego of directors get in the way. Directors don't want to work under the constraints of the studio. They want to do their own thing. And I think that Christopher Nolan actually did that to the detriment of the DC universe by kind of making Batman his own little thing. And then DC tried to back it up through the Man of Steel movie, which had Nolan's touch a little bit at the beginning. And then it kind of went off the rails with when they did do Justice League. And aside from the Avengers, I don't recall any movie series that even came close to this kind of crossover potential. Maybe the Universal Monster movies from the 1940s where you had Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Wolfman. But even then, those were low-budget movies back then, and those were just cranked out. I mean, this thing's major blockbuster franchise material. The Avengers, which came out in 2012 and broke box office records, if that was sort of like the pinnacle, this thing was the Avengers on steroids. Avengers Infinity War isn't just dealing with like four heroes from five previous movies. It's dealing with dozens of characters from 18 different movies coming together. And pretty much everybody's in it. There's a couple people who don't show up. I'm sure there are reasons here and there. The thing about this movie that I would say differentiates it from Avengers Age of Ultron. Avengers Age of Ultron was very crowded and was convoluted, and they struggled with whose story it was, and they tried to pay service to everybody involved, but it stumbled a bit. It never quite had the organic feel that the first Avengers did. And I think that they made a point to fix that in this movie. Now, in fixing that, one of the things that they did was they got the Russo brothers, who did the Winter Soldier, and they did the Captain America Civil War. So these were guys who understood how to tie some of these characters together. And I really got jazzed for this movie when I saw Captain America Civil War, and I saw how they were able to juggle all those different characters in just a Captain America movie. Which Captain America Civil War really played kind of like an Avengers 2.5. The reason they're able to cram so many characters in there and give everyone the spotlight that they deserved, and they could hand them off back and forth, and yeah, they pair up different characters. You know, you get like, I don't think it's a spoiler to point out, you had like Rocket Raccoon team up with Thor at one point. They go off and do their own thing. You finally get a chance for Tony Stark to meet Peter Quill and kind of get the banter at a certain level. These are things everyone's been hoping for, and you're able to do that because it's such a big movie. But also, the lead in this movie, the main character, is Thanos. And that's a bold move. That's a gutsy move to make the villain your main character. It's Thanos' story. And in doing so, they had to give him a character. They had to give him depth. And more than just a big purple Hulk guy. And we've seen him in other movies. He's just sitting on a throne grumping out, and he's got his helmet on, and he's just this mad leader. But they actually, it's not that they give him humanity, because he's not human, but they give him depth. And any movie, any big, huge blockbuster type movie is only as good as its villain. And so when you have a great villain, you can usually have a great movie. Case in point, look at Lethal Weapon or Lethal Weapon 2 even. They had great villains. The third Lethal Weapon was kind of a lame villain. That's why the third movie's not that great. The classic villain of all time, Darth Vader. Darth Vader's a great villain, and then they started giving him depth. And even the Emperor, as sort of the puppet master in the Star Wars movies, they had depth. This is one thing I'll defend about the prequels of Star Wars. They delved into Palpatine's ideas of what he thought. And a good villain isn't a villain in his own mind. Or look at Magneto from the X-Men movies. Magneto is not out there trying to be a villain. He's a zealot. And he believes what he's doing is right. And that's the same thing with Thanos. Thanos isn't a villain in his own mind. He's not just doing this because he's some mustache-twirling bad guy. He's got a purpose. However genocidal and twisted as he is, he thinks he's doing the right thing, ultimately. And that's what makes him a formidable villain. And then you have him that you hinge the story on, and the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy and everyone from Iron Man to Black Panther are coming at him from different angles, and they all have something to do. And that way, you're not struggling to try and make Tony Stark the main character. You're not trying to make Steve Rogers the main character. Thanos is the main character, and everybody else is fighting against him. And that's why this movie works in the structure it is. And it breezes by. I remember I was about halfway through the movie, and I didn't look at my phone for time, but I couldn't pull out my phone in the movie because I would have been kicked out of the press screening. But I figured we were about halfway through the movie, and I was like, this thing's really moving along. It goes by at a good clip. Are there some moments that, yeah, you can trim something out here and there? Honestly, there aren't a whole lot of things I would change about it. There's one moment, and I'm going to talk around it because it's not a, I'm going to say it in such a way that it's not a spoiler, but they have what happened. There's something that happens in Captain America Civil War that almost gets duplicated in this movie with another character. And I thought that was, it showed a character flaw, which I guess is reasonable for that character. And it's with Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy. But that's very forgivable. One little hiccup in the whole thing isn't a problem. But overall, the movie is a cohesive, exciting film, and it gives you everything you want. You get the witty banter. You get the comedy. There's some very laugh out loud moments, but it's also very heavy. It's very dark. But again, like I said, you're dealing with the Russo brothers who did Winter Soldier and they did Civil War. So they're used to juggling this sort of the witty and the goofiness with very heavy stuff. I mean, the Winter Soldier's like 3 Days of the Condor, and Civil War is about the entire power structure of a group of heroes falling apart and them going after each other. This one, you got an intergalactic genocidal madman, and you know, half of the universe is at stake. So it's heavy and it's dense, but it takes those themes and does stuff with those themes and makes it as grown up as you can get when you've got a giant purple guy teleporting around the galaxy trying to get powerful stones. I mean, as goofy and as high concept and as Jack Kirby as that whole Infinity Gauntlet storyline is, the Russo brothers managed to give you a movie that is grown up but can still appeal to kids. So it is dark, and there's some heavy stuff that happens, but it is well done, and they spread around the power. And so if you loved Black Panther and you want Black Panther to have his spotlight, you're going to see Black Panther have his spotlight in this movie. If you love Cap, you're going to love seeing Cap get his spotlight. You're going to see Tony Stark get his spotlight. Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, everybody gets something to do in this movie, and they work as a team, and it's not anyone. It really, truly is the Avengers. And that's kind of the way the first The Avengers was. They didn't make it an Iron Man movie. They made it the Avengers movies. And this is the Marvel superhero movies. It's not the Avengers. It's Marvel superhero. And it works. So I'm going to have to say Avengers Infinity War totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the smaller film Lean on Pete, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Paddington 2. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up with a review that has nothing to do with the Avengers. And that is Lean on Pete. A teenage boy runs away from home with an alien racehorse to find his estranged aunt in another city.
Reaching out to find you.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
Put it all behind you.
Can't get attached to the horse.
Why not?
They're here to race and nothing else.
Listen, kid, I'm selling him.
He's not a pet. He's just a horse.
I'll buy him.
What? With one money.
Come on, Pete. I'm gonna get us out of here.
This is released by A24, which has been doing a lot of smaller, you know, more independent releases, and they've done some great stuff. I remember they came on strong one year with like Spring Breakers, which I didn't particularly like, but it did quite well. They also did movies like Under Her Skin, which is that one with Scarlett Johansson as the alien stealing people's flesh. There's also Enemy, which was quite good for a while. They did The Witch. A24 does some really cool stuff. This one is less of the fantastical element and more of just a standard down-to-earth piece. It's a movie about a kid, and yeah, he's a runaway, but the basic story is he's a teenage kid. His dad's kind of a loser. He lives with his dad, but his dad kind of flops around from girlfriend to girlfriend, and half the time he's never there. He goes out on drinking binges and disappears. His mom had left them, and he finds an unlikely friend in a guy who takes care of racehorses, you know, for the track, played by Steve Buscemi, who does a really good job in it. And the kid starts working with this guy with the racehorses, and he forms a bond with this one racehorse named Lean on Pete. It's an older racehorse, and it's not in its prime. But he finds a real attachment to the horse. But of course, when the horse starts losing more than it should, you know, the horse is going to be sold to Mexico. And that's where horses go to die. That's where the glue factory is, so to speak, putting up that in air quotes, dog food factory, that kind of stuff. And so he steals a horse and goes on his own. And it's going to be a movie about a boy and his dog. So it's only the dog is a racehorse. But it's less about Lean on Pete, the title character, because that's the horse's name, Lean on Pete. And it's more about this kid. And I wouldn't say it's a coming of age story. It is a bit of a finding yourself type story. And it's an interesting choice to make this sort of runaway teen movie in the middle of flyover country. Usually when you see runaway teen movies, it's some kid in New York or Chicago or LA, and they're dealing with the big city. And that's not the situation in this movie. He's literally trying to walk from Oregon to Wyoming to find his aunt. And I don't know I've driven that route, and it's a long drive. I couldn't imagine walking with a horse. One of the things I thought it really captured is a very honest movie, and it's got some great performances. It shows what it's like when you're a teenager and it feels like the world is ending, where it feels like there is no option and that things just get worse and worse and worse, when really all you have to do is ask the right people for help, but you're afraid to go into that unknown, and you find yourself in just increasingly bad situations when in reality it's not that hard to get out of them, or at least to safety. And that's what this movie does capture. This kid who's just his life is falling apart, and you're just watching it shred away from relatively mundane things, and how he interacts with people around him, and how unpleasant things do happen, and how he does feel trapped. It's a very powerful movie. I wouldn't say it's easy to watch, but it is a well-made movie, because there's a lot of unpleasant things that happen. Now, the other thing it does, and on a side note, because it's about racehorses, it does make you feel a little squeamish about racehorses. You know, people love horses, but you can't go into that industry if you love horses, because it's hard on the horses. And, you know, if this were pushed a little harder, this could be the Blackfish of racehorse movies, because when you've had racehorse movies in the past, you've had stuff like Seabiscuit and Secretariat, and there's like, oh, that's sort of the limelight and the Triple Crown winner type characters. But this is what happens. This is what really happens to these animals. And it is unpleasant. And you have an entire industry of people who want to take care of the creatures that they're taking care of. But the creatures are so disposable to the industry that it's sad that there is no love for it. And even in the movie and in the trailer, I think she says, one of the jockeys played by Chloe Sevigny says to him, don't fall in love with these horses. They're not pets. They're working animals. But should they be? And I think that this movie, to me, made me contemplate that more than it did contemplate the kid's future. Still, I'm going to have to say that Lean on Pete kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office from last week. I mean, we all know that Avengers is going to win this week and it's going to crush everything. But last week's box office, what was interesting about it is you had A Quiet Place jump back up to number one. And that's actually pretty impressive, because it's such a small movie, and it made $20 million in its third weekend, And that would have been a great first weekend run for that movie. And then Rampage came in second, just barely came in second, and in its second week. But that's still, you know, it's doing fine. I think it's going to do fine overseas. It's going to take a huge hit this weekend with Avengers. I Feel Pretty and Super Troopers were 3 and 4 with $16 million and $15 million. So that's really soft for the Amy Schumer movie. It didn't play as well as even her last movie, Snatched, which was kind of a flop on its own. But Super Troopers was a big hit. I mean, that was a surprise, it doing $15 million for just the little money that it cost to make it. And the lesson to learn, which we've seen a billion times before with Blumhouse and other movies, is if you don't spend a whole lot of money on movies, it's a lot easier to make it to be a big hit, which is why $16 million is a little soft for Amy Schumer, but $15 million is a huge win for Super Troopers. It costs a lot less for some reason to make Super Troopers than it did to make a dumb Amy Schumer comedy. And the other thing to note is Black Panther actually came in number 8. This weekend, I'm curious to see if Black Panther will also be in the top 10 with Avengers Infinity War. It very well could be. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on Paddington 2, which just came out on DVD and Blu-ray. It came out in theaters earlier this year. The lovable Paddington Bear searches for the perfect gift for his aunt, a quest that leads him, unfortunately, into jail.
If you had one wish tonight, what would it be?
I'd like to get my Aunt Lucy a birthday present.
Aww.
An old pop-up book of London. The only problem is it's rather expensive.
Where on earth did you find it?
At Mr. Gruber's antique shop.
Stop! Thief!
Cheerio.
Hold it right there.
Afternoon, chaps. I may look like a hardened criminal, but I really am innocent.
I'm going to prove it.
If you're going to clear your name, you're going to need our help.
Paddington's made such sweet friends.
I absolutely adore the Paddington movies. I never really read the books as a kid. I mean, when I was a little kid, I read a couple of them. I mean, they're breezy and easy to get through. They're not exactly like War and Peace for five-year-olds. But Paddington, the first one, stole my heart, and I loved it. And then I saw this one, and it did the same thing. It's very charming. It's very sweet. It's got the cast back with Ben Whishaw doing the voice of Paddington. And you've got Sally Hawkins, who I love, in the movie. And she has a very Shape of Water-ish scene at one point in this film. And Hugh Grant playing the bad guy. I thought this was a lot of fun. I thought this was very sweet. I thought it was very charming. And it's a great alternative for the Avengers. If you don't want to go to the Avengers because it's too crowded, or if you've got kids, if you've got like young kids, the Avengers might be a little bit intense for them because a lot of stuff happens. But it's nice to be able to bring in Paddington. But you can watch Paddington at home, and it's good for the whole family. It's kind of the perfect family movie. I think grownups can like it. I think kids can like it. It's a charming, wonderful, just adorable little movie. And the special features on here, it actually has some special features. It's not loaded with them. I mean, it's not like a double disc set or anything, but it does have a making of video, and it does have a how to make a marmalade sandwich, which generally I would have expected a marmalade sandwich to be 2 pieces of bread, marmalade in the middle, put them together, proceed to eat. There's a music video and a little featurette on the pop-up book that Paddington's trying to get for his Aunt Lucy. And overall, it's not the special features you want to get for the movie. You want to get this movie for the movie. And it's potential of just being a good little family film for the kids on a Friday or Saturday night. So I'm going to have to say Paddington 2 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week include the somewhat odious Maze Runner The Death Cure, the also odious Hostiles, and the totally odious Den of Thieves. And that is it for this week. I need to go, and when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Overboard and Tully. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.